You are listening to Adventures Within with Jennifer Moon and Robert Watkins. Adventures Within is brought to you by Faction 2 of The Revolution in partnership with Kaechung Radio. Faction 2 of The Revolution is committed to creating alternatives to the established orders of both the bourgeois culture of the fine art world and the spectacle arena of representations that constitute popular culture, in order to stimulate a new society that is both socially aware and politically motivated. Adventures Within is fervent in its mission to heighten awareness in and of the personal and private realms in order to realize and sustain political action. The segregation of the personal and the political, the public and the private, the individual and the populace are no longer expansive. This is Adventures Within.
This is Jennifer Moon. Welcome to Adventures Within. I have a very special guest with me tonight, Johanna Breiding. You want to say hi?
Hello, everybody.
Hey. Okay. Maybe I need to lower the mics. I always have to adjust things. Can you hear?
I can hear.
Yeah, you can hear yourself? Okay.
Oh, yeah.
I've turned the monitors down because sometimes it interferes with the... that gives feedback or something.
Mm-hmm.
But I think I have the headphones on. Okay, so hi.
Hi.
Hi. How are you?
I'm good. Very good.
Yeah.
Thank you for inviting me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming on. So today was the last day of your show, Epitaph for Family at Human Resources. How are you feeling about that?
Very good. I just walked over here and... Rafa was the last guest. He was laying on the floor, covered in dirt, because he's been working on a big installation at Lace. And that felt like a really, really special way to end the exhibition. Also, my former mentor, Kashila Brooke, came, and a lot of other friends, which felt very good.
Yeah. So what do you want to talk about?
I don't know. I feel like we should talk about us.
Okay.
Our meeting.
Yes. So the first time I met Johanna was here at Kaechung. She and Kashila were a guest on Keen O'Brien's show. He did a short series of shows on Kaechung, and then that was the first time I met you. And I remember your car got towed,
mm-hmm.
and you gave me your last cigarette.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. And then I was like, when I met Johanna, I was like, who's that? She's really cute. And then I sent her a message on Facebook being like, hi, my name's Jennifer and I just met you and thanks for giving me a cigarette and I think you're really cute. Do you want to like go out sometime or something like that or studio visit? And Johanna was very kind. And what did you say? Oh, you said something about like you... just recently ended a relationship,
mm-hmm.
right? Yeah.
I told you I recently ended a relationship that I was not emotionally available,
right.
But that I liked meeting you and would like to get to know you more. And I just also loved when you wrote me that message, how direct it was. I feel like people rarely do that when they have feelings for people to express them freely. So
yeah.
I actually started to trust you the moment I met you in this way.
Oh yeah. You know, I was actually, I was really, when your response, it was very sweet and not like you weren't afraid or something, you know? And I feel that response also created some trust between us. Cause I was like, oh, Johanna's really good person, really sweet. And yeah, it was just really, really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And then you were in the Book of Eros. You were actually the last entry in the Book of Eros. And then we had a studio visit.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh. Which was really nice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was living in Topanga for the month, and you were horseback riding. I came and watched you horseback ride.
That's right.
With your, like, lesbian coach.
Oh my god. Vivian?
Yeah.
She's so not queer. I mean, I don't think. Oh my god, I can totally tell her that you said that.
Yeah.
You were, like, fascinated by her.
Yeah, she was amazing.
She's
like in the middle of this, how do you call it, arena?
Yeah, yeah.
In the center of the arena with these, like, you know, majestic horses, and it was all women horseback riders,
mm-hmm.
yeah?
Mm-hmm.
And, like, with the big whip and strong voice and...
Yeah, she's very strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Was she yelling at me?
She was yelling at a woman who was very short, I remember.
Oh, yes, I know who it was.
Yeah.
It's Carol, yeah.
Yeah.
Because actually, Carol and me are the people she yells at the most.
Yeah.
When my friend David came and watched, like, she was yelling at me the whole time. David thought that was, like, hilarious.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I remember after that you came to our place in Topanga, and we talked about work. Like, it was a lot of work. I was doing, I think, a sculpture for a show I had in Norway. The ice sculpture was melting when you came.
Mm-hmm.
With it had two dowsers inside. Dowsers are instruments to find water or spirits. But I remember talking about the work, and then probably halfway through the studio visit, you started asking me very direct questions. And I think they were questions I've been, like, you know, thinking about myself, but hadn't produced any work about. So I feel like this whole show, Epitaph for Family, also started with me being questioned by you, and me actually realizing that I had deep feelings about this topic and needed to do something with that.
Yeah, because you were part of some of the pieces were about, like, your mom. And about, like, family,
mm-hmm.
the table and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 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 totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, and those are, like, the things I was, like, really drawn to. I'm generally really drawn to, like, really personal things. And especially, like, the family, because the family is, like, really... and I've said this before during the Tear Talk with Tyler, that, like, family is where we learn how to give and receive love.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, like, it's, like, our first institution, kind of. And, and then we carry that with us throughout our various love relationships throughout our life. So it's, like, really powerful. Like, family is super powerful in that way. And also, like, I mean, and also, like, kind of traumatic in
mm-hmm.
some ways. Because certainly the people who know me, I mean, a lot of my work deals with love and with different forms of love. But the show at the Hammer was about Eros. Which is romantic individual love versus agape, which is love of and for the people, or, like, a certain political love,
mm-hmm.
which I struggle with. And so, like, trying to find a merging of those two, and definitely, like, the way that I learned to give and receive love, like, I've had to really delve into that,
mm-hmm.
and because I noticed myself playing it out in these various pursuits for romance, you know, which probably has to do a lot with my relationship with my brother and my father, maybe, and also my mom, you know. But maybe we can talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's fucking hot in here.
It's so hot in here.
It's fucking hot. I feel like I'm fucking melting.
Yeah.
Let me just crack the door a little bit.
Okay.
I'll continue
talking. Okay. I like that you mentioned Eros and Agate, because I feel like if I were to think of my show, maybe, like, Eros and Thanatos would be a good way to describe it, like love and death, and
uh-huh.
combining the two, and how those two things, like, very, like, are closely relating and intertwining throughout the different works. I think I received, like, incredible, incredible love from my mother.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I describe her as a, like, I'm not religious, but, like, an angel of sorts, where I just feel like she would walk into the room and everyone would turn around and look at her, and she had this smile that was contagious, and just treated people as equals, and had a big, big heart. So I feel like I definitely received a lot of love from a very, very young age from her. But then I also think losing her brought me closer to my father.
Mm-hmm.
Who's very different than my mother, has a hard time expressing love. And I do think we're products of our parents in ways, but I also, for me, I feel like a lot of the ways that I function in the world are actually, like, the opposite of how I was raised.
Yes. That does happen with, like, it seems like, I mean, maybe this is setting up a dichotomy or something, but, like, in my experiences talking to people in relation to their families and learning how to love and, give and receive love, like, some people do the opposite. Mm-hmm. Like, I think I've probably done the opposite of what I've learned mm-hmm. from my family. But some people kind of, like, you know, continue that mm-hmm. that way of being.
Mm-hmm.
So you were saying that you... Wait, did you say it was, like, counter?
Well, I think in some ways, like, I... my mother continuously lives on, like, through me in a way, and I also feel like through my actions, I try and follow her footsteps. So the way I treat people, I want to treat them the way she did, or the way that I love people, I want to do how she initially taught me, you know, like...
How are your, like, personal romantic relationships? Do they kind of mirror that?
The one now, I think, very much so. I think.
Sorry, I had to open the screen door because everyone left, so I can open it now.
Yeah, good.
Is this uncomfortable? I mean, there's certainly a certain hesitation or uncomfortability when talking about, like, family and personal love relationships, right? And I think this is kind of what you're getting at with your show.
Yeah.
You know, to bring up these highly personal things. And then maybe we can talk about, like, our collaboration
mm-hmm.
as an example of that,
mm-hmm.
which is, for those of you who haven't seen the show, Johanna asked me to write text that would be narrated over video, like edited family footage during the time when Johanna was between 5 and 8. Is that right?
Like 3 and 8.
3 and 8.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Maybe you can talk about, like, why you asked me to.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I knew that I had all this, or that my father in the basement in Switzerland had all this footage on European VHS tapes. And I just wanted them because I wanted to see my mother, you know? And at first I wasn't sure if I was going to use that footage, but I realized after knowing that I was going to include so many different individuals for the Magic Hour piece, that are 9 individuals speaking and very intimately sharing their stories, I thought it would only be fair if I told mine also. Mm. And I think since it was such a traumatic event for me, it's hard. It's not hard to talk about, but I think it's hard to make work and know, okay, a lot of people can see this, or this is out in the world living on its own. It's not just like me and you talking, or mm-hmm. me and you talking on the radio, you know?
Yeah.
So I think just initially, like I said, when you sent me that first message, there was already some form of trust, because I just knew that you were very direct. And then I followed your practice and also realized the way in which you work is something that interests me a lot, like your revolution, or the way that you think about, like, death of self, and there's something about your voice. Like, I remember watching that video, I think you did it for The Hammer, when you're talking to not an audience. Before I knew you very well, I remember watching that, and I was like, wow, she has such an incredible voice on stage, like a presence where it's really calm, but also you can get your points across. That, like, I got goosebumps, and you made me laugh, and I, like, you know, started getting sad about things. Like, you could very much evoke these emotions in me through what you were saying. So almost like I would believe anything you would tell me in this way, like how politicians maybe have.
Oh my God.
But you use it in a, yes, which is very dangerous, but I feel like the way you do it is in a very aware way, and your goals and your artwork, or I think how you lead your life, is also very positive and not to harm people. So I thought it would be really interesting to have someone else tell my story. Like, mm-hmm. I would meet with you. I had already started telling you this story without knowing that we were going to collaborate.
Mm-hmm.
So you knew a lot of it, and then it just felt very natural. It felt like an organic way to proceed, to tell you, look, I'm reading these, you know, texts this is like formally shaping the exhibition, but then on a personal level, these are the stories that I want to be in the film. I don't know how it was for you or
no I mean, I'm extremely flattered that you asked me, and it was, and like you mentioned how I'm interested in a death of self, like I have been fantasizing about ways to like kill self or like die so that I can merge and become other. I've been watching this show Sense8 on Netflix, which my friend Malik Gaines suggested I watch, and it's about like these group of eight individuals who are no longer just them. They have now expanded to include these seven other people in their psyche, and so I'm really interested in like how that is possible. And you know, in terms of like, I think we'll talk a lot more about like queering and stuff, but to me that's like a certain way of queering one's notion of, I guess, self.
Mm-hmm.
It was an interesting process, like for me to write as you, because I wrote in a way that I don't, in a style that I don't usually write, and like I know that like, because you mentioned like you were wanting it like more kind of poetic, and so like to like it, and honestly, this was like the hardest text that I've ever written, and I think it's you know, it's for multiple reasons, but like there's something that happens, like there's a letting go that has to happen, right? Like you have to let go of yourself, you know, like an opening, mm-hmm. you know, for me to enter your psyche, mm-hmm. you know, and like and that trust has to be there,
mm-hmm.
and then I have to like let go of myself as well to kind of channel you or try to an attempt to become you,
mm-hmm.
so this like this shedding happens, and the things that created from that space I think is like it was super magical,
mm-hmm.
And yeah.
Yeah, I think just also you mentioning the psyche, I feel like my mom had very how do you say it? Psychic tendencies?
Uh-huh.
What do you say it like that?
Uh-huh.
She had that very much so, and I feel like I do too, and it's almost like her having that and then me passing it down to me, and then you through that almost like telepathically or something like transporting it into you, uh-huh. in a way that because when I read it to my best friend and she was like over the phone and she was crying and she was like, oh my god, I cannot believe that you put this all in words. I was like, oh, I didn't, this was someone else.
That's
and
amazing.
She was like, that's how did that work, like and I Litia, my new friend, said that you were like a ghostwriter, which I thought was a very good description.
Yeah, because she, like, yeah, we just saw her downstairs recently, and she, when she was watching the video, was like, no one else but Johanna could write this.
Yeah.
And then she, but then she like realized like I wrote it, and then she was like, oh my god, that's like incredible,
mm-hmm.
you know, just like doing that kind of becoming others or something.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that part, and also like an interesting, like you were originally going to narrate it,
yeah.
right? And then
yeah.
so like you started narrating it, but then like decided like it just didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
Can you talk more about that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I tried reading it out loud a few times, and I each time just like my voice would get shaky. I feel like how I was saying before, how you have a very stoic voice. My voice is. I feel, how do you say? It's like, it's a, like, you know, it's a, not my, the language that I think in, mm-hmm. always, mm-hmm. you know? And I think also reading something out loud that you wrote, but is something that happened to me, just made me feel really emotional. And I felt like the content of the text already is emotional, that it, I don't want it to be a dramatic or like melodramatic piece where through, you know, a crackly voice or an inconsistent voice or, you know, a voice that becomes emotional or saddened throughout the text, I think would influence the viewer in a way that I didn't want to have happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like you seem neutral in a way.
Right. There's something that happens. I think it was Abigail who was saying that when she watched it, she was commenting on that, like how like there was just enough distance because there's some there. I feel like, do you feel like in art in general that there is like kind of a resistance to a certain hyper-personal?
Completely. Yeah.
Because maybe it somehow feels alienating, like you can't enter it.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the reason why, or is it because that we're so like not in touch with our emotions, or you know, like there is something there, mm-hmm. that's like that feels like one can't enter, mm-hmm. that space. And mm-hmm. I think like me narrating it allowed a certain like opening, mm-hmm. for people to then settle into it, where they can then access the certain emotions that I was channeling from you,
mm-hmm.
through the writing,
mm-hmm.
yeah, and mm-hmm. then through like my speaking of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like for me it's like to be my most authentic self in art making means to be completely vulnerable. And I think for me personally, because I learn so much through people and with people, to be completely vulnerable I need to be in contact with someone, or I need to give it to them, mm-hmm. you know, in order for me to receive it back again.
Yeah.
Like similar to a love relationship, I think it's in collaboration that can very much happen, where it's like fully trusting someone, and also knowing that if it comes from a very, very personal place and it's something that is as universal as death, let's say, I think no matter what, it's going to be vulnerable, but also approachable for others, or like make or let other people feel.
Mm-hmm.
And I think for me that's a important thing, is like have people actually like feel artwork, not see it,
mm-hmm.
feel,
yeah,
you know, experience. Like a lot of people spent a lot of time in the exhibition or would watch like our piece over and over and over again. I think also the collaboration, because it was a three-way collaboration with Carrie Cronenwett,
yes.
Who lives in Berlin, who's a filmmaker, and I think it was really amazing to see how this collaboration worked, because a lot of times with essay films, I think either you come up with a text first and then you go and shoot, you know, or use like archival footage or whatever, but you put the imagery in afterwards, or you first have all the footage and then you add the text in. Mm-hmm. And with this piece, the imagery and the editing of the imagery and then the language and the composing of the text happened simultaneously,
mm-hmm.
and like just were woven together in this like really simple but I thought very effective way.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
It's rare. I think that's like strange that was able to happen.
Yeah.
You know?
There's a certain ease. I felt like all three of us had this, we didn't have a certain attachment to, like for you, like an attachment to your emotions and memories in relation to your mother's death, and mm-hmm. also like the text also talked about you like coming out to your family in a death of identity,
mm-hmm.
and then like the disfiguring of family and stuff like that, mm-hmm. so like you not having a certain attachment to that story, which allowed you to then share it with me, mm-hmm. and then me writing the text and not having an attachment to that text to then give it to Carrie, which he then like edited and like into the video,
mm-hmm.
so and it felt very, yeah, like it felt like we were like sensate,
yeah,
you know, yeah, yeah. Like
I mean,
we're,
I have
like,
to watch
cluster.
That show, but yeah,
oh my god, yeah, 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 mm-hmm. yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, oh yeah. I do want to talk about like just like queering and like queer, like maybe like do you like how would you define like queerness, queering, queer? Do you have a specific, or maybe there's?
I mean, I feel like it changes.
Yeah,
I don't think I have one definition. I think, I mean, you know, if I think of it like intellectually, it's like not being non-heteronormative, you mm-hmm. know, going against the grain or the grid, being on the outskirts of, or in the merge, mm-hmm. merging. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I think for me, this show was also important to talk about queerness by, you know, introducing the viewer to nine individuals who all identify as queer, but the way that they're queer, either in their lifestyle or in their choice of who they love, was very, very different from individual to individual. So I feel like if you were to ask them, they probably would all have a different answer. But I think it's just, you know, asking deeper and trying to find further solutions to things that have been ingrained in us, or that we consider normal mm-hmm. or natural.
Mm-hmm. Is there a goal?
Is there a goal in what?
In queerness? Queering? Is there a... you know, like, a lot of the text that you gave me to read mm-hmm. in relation to queer theory talks about the horizon, mm-hmm. you know, and, like, the horizon being an unreachable space, but also a way of orienting oneself.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, the definition that I've been throwing around, description of queerness that I like was by Lee Edelman, who wrote that book, No Futures, which, of course, I have not read. but he said that queerness can never define an identity. It can only ever disturb one, which mm-hmm. is, I think, what you were talking about in terms of, like, kind of, like, being on the outside or, like, being, like, trying to figure out a forge a way that's beyond or outside of like a heteronormative mm-hmm. kind of way of being.
Mm-hmm.
I'm wondering if it will always so that since it's like it's almost like since it can't be defined, since it's like always kind of or it's defined in relation to something that's like in a position of power or mm-hmm. something, so then it always shifts, mm-hmm. right? It's always shifting.
Mm-hmm.
So then I think Jose Esteban Munoz was talking about like how it's can never be attained, mm-hmm. right? It's always like in the future. It's something that we can reach for, which reminds me of a definition of utopia by, I think Foucault said that utopia is no place and nowhere. It's a drive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's something mm-hmm. that drives one,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I guess... And so when I think in terms of, like, my interest in queerness, queering, I'm, like, wondering, like, I think also the idea of, like, when I ask, like, is it a goal, that's also, like, within this kind of system that we're in to think of in terms of, like, a goal mm-hmm. or, like, an ending mm-hmm. or something, which is what, like, death is.
Yeah. Well, but, and also if you ask that, it's, like, is there a beginning or, you know, if you say is there a goal, then where's the starting point, you know?
Right.
Which... if we're using like death as like the ultimate queering of sorts,
uh-huh.
then I think like, you know, you could say that like you're traumatized the moment you're born or like that's like the first time you experience trauma, but you then forget that. And so it's like you relearn traumas through different experiences until again, at the very end of your life, you experience the ultimate trauma, which is death.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And that reminds me a little bit of what the We Are Not Enough text by Don...
Romsberg?
Yeah, yeah, mm-hmm. yeah, about, like, which I really, really liked his text. He was kind of somewhat talking about trauma or, like, how these failures mm-hmm. kind of push one into kind of forging or creating an alternative for the things that we didn't receive.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, and I started thinking about, like, is trauma and failure and all those kind of notions built into, like, a drive towards queering or queerness,
mm-hmm.
you know?
I would say yes. I think being open to talk about these things and openly process them, I think, is an act of queerness in a way, you know, where it's like, we're not used to speaking about death, or we're not used to even like celebrating death or sharing such intimate stories.
Mm-hmm.
But I think if more people were to do so, people who have not yet experienced that type of trauma, for them it would come easier.
Yeah.
You know, and I think it's also like, even with the show, I think the most beautiful thing for me was collaboration, you know, with you and Carrie Cronin-Wett, also having like so much support from my girlfriend Cho, who's just like there for me constantly and like gave me a lot of curatorial advice and questioned a lot of things too. So it was like having very early on conversations that she helped me by asking questions, like similar to how you did when we had our first studio visit. But then I think also meeting a lot of people or getting to know people that I didn't know very well, because they would come to the exhibition and it felt like it really helped form this like new sense of community
mm-hmm.
In my life, and like, you know, maybe yours if you were there or for other people involved. So I think for me that was really, really special having that. And it felt very queer also, like having an art show where it's like feeling and experiencing the art, but also with each other.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because, did you see this, or maybe some other people, but there's like this, in terms of like death, or like being alone, or like dying alone. I think, yeah, like this idea that you enter the world alone, and then you end up dying alone. Mm-hmm. Is that something that you believe in or subscribe to?
I think all humans are scared to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
I think we strive for some sort of closeness within people, and yeah, I mean, we are born alone, unless you're a twin, I guess, or shortly after. And depending on your situation, you die alone, but you could, I believe in communal death, and I guess communal birth too.
Well, what do you think happens after death?
I don't know. I mean, I almost don't care.
You don't care?
I feel like for a long time I thought something would happen, and then I think after my mom died, I thought nothing happened, and I don't believe in, you know, heaven or hell, or like living a life so that once you're dead you'll go somewhere else, but I don't know.
I don't know either, but I like would certainly be very excited if after I die in this body, in this existence, in this shared reality, that maybe something like I enter a different dimension or something, or mm-hmm. maybe I become a sensate for real. I mean, not that like I'm not, that's not possible now, but then it's like that's also like this like desire that I have, or this like fantasy of like living on and like thinking about death in terms of like the end, mm-hmm. which, you know, and mm-hmm. then like when I was writing that text thinking about like how do you queer death, and we've had this conversation, you know, and mm-hmm. like I had like difficulty because like what, you know, if queering is defined as a certain like disruption of identity, then thinking about the identity of death, mm-hmm. like what is the identity of death?
Mm-hmm.
Death is like it signifies a certain end, especially mm-hmm. for the people who are living, mm-hmm. you know?
Mm-hmm.
And in the text that I wrote, I talked a lot about memories and how we keep the dead alive in memories, and we don't allow the dead to completely die.
They linger.
Know? They linger, yeah. And so then I was like, oh, is like queering death like totally letting them go? You know, like how can, you know, but like, is that possible, or like what would that look like, or you know, how is that, you know, because I'm sure your mom lives in you,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
And like I mean maybe that's not even something people want to do, but like why do we keep them alive? What, you know, like maybe they really are, mm-hmm. you know, maybe mm-hmm. like when people die they become part of you, and maybe mm-hmm. really your mom is part of you, and that's mm-hmm. why you have these memories, these sensations,
mm-hmm.
you know, of feeling her,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
Which would be kind of cool, mm-hmm. you know, or mm-hmm. But yeah, this is like the thing that I kind of struggle with in terms of like how does one queer death, and then you mentioned something about like, well, maybe the why it's so difficult is because death is already queer,
mm-hmm.
you know, because it sort of like counters kind of our understanding of life and death,
mm-hmm.
in a certain like especially how it exists in this reality,
mm-hmm.
Where it seems like we consider living to be we're like breathing and in a body and able to like interact with people in a shared reality,
mm-hmm.
you know, and when that's over then it's over,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
you know.
Yeah, I was just right now while you're talking, thinking also in terms of like more, like on a like micro level, that like hair is dead or nails are dead already, but they continue to grow.
Mm.
So, like, even after you're dead for a few days, or I don't know, maybe a week or a month, I'm not sure the exact timing, your hair still continues to grow, but it's dead to begin with. So, I feel like in this like abject way, I think hair would be a very queer part of the body,
uh-huh.
anatomy, yeah. right?
Right.
Where it's like, I don't know if that's completely irrelevant,
no,
but
no,
that's
I
just.
Like it.
I was thinking, like, hair is probably queer.
Yeah,
you know?
Hair is queer.
Yeah.
And nails too.
Yeah.
So queering then would be like a certain continuing after death.
This yeah, like but, weird. But then it goes back to what we were saying. Well, continuing after death is like, you know, death only exists for the people who are still alive,
right?
So that's why I'm like, then it already is the ultimate queerness. And if we were to get rid of that, I think that would just, we would have to be robots. I think that would mean that we wouldn't be able to have feelings. Like, I think...
Oh.
I think if you have ever loved someone and that person is gone, you'll mourn.
Yes.
Right? Whereas if you never loved that person, then the death of them has always been there.
Yes, because the more, what you're mourning is the fact that you don't get to experience that person
exactly
anymore.
Exactly. I'm denied loving my mother.
Yeah. So then
but it's not that I didn't receive the love, but I'm now denied that.
Right.
You know?
It's
but,
like an end.
Yeah,
an
but then end. In this, I can love this artwork, and that's loving my mother in a way. So it's almost like,
yeah,
right, using this collaboration to continuously love.
Yes, continuously yeah. love, holding on. So then I start thinking, okay, like, because sometimes I, like, go back, like, back and forth with, in terms of, like, if I'm, like... Then wouldn't it kind of be, like, a selfish thing or something? Like, because it's all about, like, me being denied a certain love, a certain experience in this world,
mm-hmm.
in this reality with this person because this person is now gone.
I think it's definitely selfish, but I also think it's very selfless. I think to love is a selfless act.
Uh-huh.
And it's a selfish. I think they're both.
Right. And that's just something that's
like...
Yeah, this kind of like bothness mm-hmm. is also something that I'm interested in, because mm-hmm. like when I wrote the description, the mailer for the show, tonight's show,
mm-hmm.
I talked about like, because like in the Munoz text he wrote how like the here and now is a prison cell,
yeah,
and like how when I first read it I was like startled, because I talk about like being in the now is like the only place that magic can occur, so
yeah.
I was like, wait a minute, like this seems to like oppose the second principle of the revolution.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
How am I supposed to deal with that? How am I supposed to negotiate this thing? And then also with Don's text with the "we are not enough."
Uh-huh. But
like, there's a glitter. I made that glitter sign that says "you are not enough." You are enough.
Oh yeah,
you are enough. And
that's
so when
amazing.
Yeah. So when I read that text, I was like, wait a minute. You know. So but that space of occupying both ends of the spectrum of a seeming spectrum simultaneously
mm-hmm.
is like. Something like I consider that like pointing to a way out.
Yeah,
it's pointing to a way out to be able to occupy those things.
Yeah,
because like, because it doesn't fit into how our brains have been. Because you know the system that we live in is hierarchical. You know, it's based on binaries. It's you know, so the way that the logic and our thinking is based on the system that we're in. So like to break that. And then go in an attempt to go to this other space that cannot yet be defined.
Mm-hmm.
To me, that's like the queering part. Like, you know, like I can, like even when I was writing that text, I felt like I was trying to say something, but there wasn't like a certain language that was available or existed
mm-hmm.
to kind of describe that thing,
mm-hmm.
whatever the thing is. And that's some, that space is what I'm interested in. Like,
mm-hmm.
how do you get to this space that, like, I don't even really know how to even see,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
or like experience, because it's totally beyond the system that I'm under, that my psyche, my gene expression and stuff like exist in,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
like, and so like I felt like I was reaching for things, grasping for things and like not being able to like. Be in that space, and maybe that's what Munoz was talking about
mm-hmm.
in the introduction to his book Cruising Utopias,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
and then I was thinking like oh, maybe like you know, people who are interested in like queerness, like they're time travelers, so what they're doing is like pulling this future into the present, and that's where the magic happens,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
So I actually, someone said that to me, I don't know if they were quoting someone else, but I really liked it, about like pulling the future into the present.
I like that.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, and, like, how do we do that? Like, how do we fucking do that? You know, like, I want that. I want to do that, you know?
Yeah.
And, like, because I saw my friend Lauren just sent me this video of this guy who is colorblind, and they have these new, like, glasses that allows them to see the full color, the spectrum
wow,
that exists.
That's
and,
amazing.
Yeah, and he saw purple for the very first time, and
mm-hmm.
he was like, what the fuck is this?
That's amazing.
Right, and like I was almost like crying because he was, and like he's like, oh my god, like he like totally blew his mind because he's like, what is this? I've never seen this before. Yeah.
You can't imagine a color you've never seen.
Yeah, and so that's kind of what I'm interested. Like, how do we get to that place, or like, how do we experience an emotion that we don't, that doesn't yet exist?
Mm-hmm.
Like, what, you know, like, how do we get to that place?
Well, I think people, you know, when you hear the stories of people who've died and then come back, they have,
right? Yeah,
they still can't define what would happen if you're dead, but they, you know, describe the energy or the light or
The energies.
I think it's a
I think I'm really into this. Like, I'm sorry, talking like.
I'm an active listener.
No, I feel I don't want to like bogart anything, but like I have this like new like, you know, I've said this before many times, and it's something that Michael Blomsterberg has said about like that most of the time we have relationship, we're not having relationships with each other, but our beliefs are having relationships with one another. Mm-hmm. I've said this to you before. Mm-hmm. Like my belief of myself and my belief of you are having a relationship with your belief of yourself and your belief of me. So now I'm like, and this is when he said that, I I'm sure you guys have heard me say this a million times, but I imagine like us being zombies, like hosts to these belief entities, you know? And so then like I'm like now trying, which are fine, I'm not trying to bag on belief entities, I'm sure they're like, you know, they're creatures too, but they like without my awareness of them, they dictate my actions. Mm-hmm. And so then I have, like, who am I? I don't know. I'm like a host to these belief entities. So I'm trying to, like, exorcise them, like exorcism, you know? And then
When you say exorcise, but you're like,
exorcise. I kept saying like exercise. I'm like, no. I'm not saying, I don't mean to like fucking like, I'm not doing like exercises, but exorcise. And I had this like revolution on like my friend Gaia's show I was on about like how, and this is going back to like the energies and the feelings that you're talking about in terms of your interest in like what you're looking for in art is to like inspire these kind of emotions and feelings, right? Because I feel like the feelings that I have, that if I sit with the feeling and I can't link it back to a belief, you know, like, and this is what I consider to be intuition. Those are like pure feeling, if I can talk about purity of emotions.
Can you give me an example?
Okay. This is an example that I gave on Gaia's show, which my friend David, you know, David Bell. So like, you know, I like totally thought I was in love with him and stuff like that. But, and I thought we were like perfect for each other. But from the beginning of when we met, I had this feeling like that it wasn't quite right. You know, like we're not a good fit. Or like I told him this too. Like this, I would get really nihilistic feelings when I would like look at him. You know, and I was focused on this belief that I had that we were meant to be together and we're such a good fit and blah blah blah. But I was ignoring this other feeling which I could not link to any logical belief or you know, like, you know how people say like I have a bad feeling but I can't explain why, or like I have a really good feeling about this but I can't explain why. So then I feel like that is like the feeling that I need to go with, because it's like beyond the belief entity, you
it's
know?
It's the intuition.
Intuition, yes, right.
Intuition
yeah,
entity.
Yeah.
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 So, yeah.
Well, but I also think it depends on if you have good intuition or not.
And how do you know that?
I know I do.
Right.
Well,
okay.
I do now. I didn't always.
Yes, because there's also, like, people ask this question also about, like, how can you know what's your intuition and, like, what's like fear or something, because I feel like there's a certain, because like the belief entities produce a certain feeling, right? And it's, so it's like being able to filter through the feelings, like being able to sit with the feeling, like really sit with it and like kind of like feel it and have it lead you, the feeling leads you to either a belief entity or it leads you to nothing that it can be attached to, and that's like the true intuition. But I struggle with that, you know, especially with the formula of the hammer. That was kind of about like figuring out what my intuition was, you know. So like, what was, do you know the point where you were able to state definitively kind of like you trust your intuition? Was there a certain instance or experience?
You mean for my show?
Or no, just like, because you said like I think I have good intuition, but you didn't think you did before.
Oh.
Was there like a point that switched?
I think I've just gotten better at reading people or knowing who to trust. I think it's that. I think it's through through being wrong a few times that now I can be more right.
Yeah, like the failure that Donna was talking about, the failure, the trauma.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's learning that or, even like different like coping mechanisms that you only can develop if you've experienced things that have, you know, hurt you or not been good.
Yes.
Or where you trusted your intuition on in a wrong way.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah.
I think through failure. Yeah. I think it's like embracing failure, not feeling shame.
Mm.
And being transparent.
Yes. Yeah.
Like for me, this show, I felt like I was very transparent. I was like, people now, if they have good intuition, they'll know me.
Yeah.
Or they'll know of a certain part inside of me that I gave them.
Yes.
You know?
Oh, that's so beautiful. It is.
Thank you.
I mean, that's like the death of self.
Yeah.
You know? Because, like, I think a lot, you know, like when you're talking about how we, like, people don't want to be alone. Oh, that's kind of our time. We have like 5 minutes.
Is it time for a song?
Almost. Almost. Oh. We can, like, wrap it up. But, like how people don't want to be alone, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. However, like I feel like our lives are built not with our awareness or anything. I mean, certainly I did that, building walls to keep people out,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really actually scary to think of letting people in sometimes,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know where I'm getting with that. That alarm kind of fucked me up in terms of my train of thought. But,
I don't know. I mean, I feel like the more you let someone in, the more they'll let you in, too.
Yes.
Right. So I think it's also with community building or the death of self, which, like, would mean the multiples, right? I think in order to achieve the multiples or a sense of, you know, community, family, whatever you want to call it, is by giving parts of yourself up.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or just opening a big part of yourself up and letting people in.
Yeah.
You know.
It feels good.
It feels very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are there any like last things that you want to talk about? Or?
No, I guess I just want to thank people. Can I thank people?
Oh my God, please, yes.
Okay, well, I would like really just feel like very, very gracious that Julie Tolentino, Taisha Padgett, Don Romsberg, and his beautiful daughter Asha Romsberg, Samuel White, Darius Morrison, Dean Spade, Calvin Burnup, and Rachel Carnes took the time to participate and be vulnerable and share these very intimate stories to me and everyone who came to the show. I would love to thank you, Jennifer Moon, and Carrie Cronin-Wett, also Maggie Nelson for writing a beautiful text, and Malena Dam, my best friend, who's in Copenhagen. And then I would also like to thank Sho, my girlfriend, for just being there for me and showing me how to love anew.
Oh, that is so beautiful.
Let's sing.
Okay.
Yeah?
Okay. Okay. We can sing.
Or do you want to say something?
No, no. I was just wondering, like, what's next for you? Do you like? What do you?
I'm gonna go surfing and tenting for a week in nature and rejuvenate. I feel like I need to. I want to focus on health and like relaxation and kind of just like process everything that happened this last month. And then I have a few next projects coming up, that are still, I don't know if I should share them.
Okay.
Oh yeah. I feel like
you don't have to.
Yeah.
You surprise us.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like that. I like to, you know, take my time and then make work and surprise people.
Yeah, surprises.
Yeah, maybe I'll tell you on the if we do this again.
Okay. Do you think that time. Do you think that surprises, like if we all merge psyches, would surprises exist anymore, or we would always know?
Wait, say that again?
It's like if we merged psyches, like if we all became like death of self, we all like died as individuals and became one, would like stuff like surprises cease to exist?
I don't think so, because I think that would only happen if it was a certain set of people that couldn't be, like, the group couldn't be expanded. But I think since, like, how we're living, there's always new people that come or people leave. Those new people come or the people that leave are surprises in itself. I feel like there's a constant rotation in life, if that's, you know, your lover, your birth family, or the family that you end up creating, or not, you know, or whoever it is that you spend that time with. I think all of those sharing of intuitions and like opening up psyches to one another happen in cycles. I think it would be impossible. It would be only possible if it was one cycle with the exact same amount of people that would never change. But then life would be boring. To answer your question, I think it wouldn't be able to cease again unless we were robots.
Robots.
Or it kept static.
Yeah.
You know, it's like we want osmosis, no status.
Okay, right.
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Because a part of me sometimes thinks like, yeah, let's get rid of surprises. Like, fuck surprises.
No,
fuck privacy. Because then I think like, that's like, if we get rid of that, that's like a leads to a way to creating something beyond our imagination to come in. Like, if there were no surprises, maybe there's something else on the horizon that's even better than a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
But we can't imagine, kind of like that guy seeing purple and like, what the fuck is this? You know?
Yeah, yeah.
But then when I was listening to you talk, I was like, oh yeah, but we're not like the only beings in the universe.
Exactly.
You know, even if we all combine, there's still the fucking, you know, the environment.
Exactly.
Unless we combine with the environment, then there's the universe. But then there's also potential for different dimensions.
You know,
that would lead, that's kind of like a very solipsistic kind of view of life if we were just like, if it was just us.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. There's got to be, you know. But I'm like so down with trying to figure out, like, I want a new emotion.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see a new color.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's make that happen.
Yes. Yes.
Okay. So we're going to sing the song we sing together. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you.
I think you're such a wonderful person, and I'm so glad that I know you. And thank you so much for asking me to participate in your show. I feel very honored, and I think it's a very important show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, so the song we sing together is What's Up by Four Non-Blondes. Okay, this is like, I had to tell the story.
We're just two non-blondes.
Two non-blondes. And I have lyrics for you. So the show that I've been referencing on, you know, tonight, which is Sense8, which is, you can watch it on Netflix. There's a scene where they sing the song. So there's like eight of them. So one of them, this DJ puts this song on their headphones and so started playing it. And then like they all start singing because they can hear it in their psyche because they're all connected, and they're all eight of them end up singing this song. And I was like, and I forgot about this song because this song is from like 93, and I was like, oh my god, I forgot about this song, it's so good. And then when we met for lunch to talk about the show, and I was like, what song should we sing together, and I told you about that, and you were like, oh my god, that's the song that I came out to.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So then,
and I just realized, I was like, I didn't come out in 93, it was 97, but I think Switzerland takes much longer to get pop music. Switzerland's a little slow.
But it was like the influential song.
Yeah, yeah. No, for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
And I love that because the song we sing together often comes that way. You know, I'm like, what should it be? And then all of a sudden I hear a song and then it like somehow is like perfect.
Yeah.
So I'm going to have you put on the headphones so that you can hear the song.
So I get a better voice.
Well, it's not about singing it well. I obviously don't sing very well. But, okay. Anyway, so if you want to sing along, the lyrics are posted on the Adventures Within Kaechung Tumblr. The address is adventureswithin.kaechungradio.org. And the song is What's Up by Four Non-Blondes. And let me just, like, I gotta, like, because I think we're gonna get loud. So I'm gonna fidget with the, so that we don't, like, start screaming. Okay, so here is gonna happen. It's gonna happen. It's gonna happen right now. Hey, don't have to sing directly in the mic.
25 years and my life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination. I realized quickly when I knew I should that the world was made up of this brotherhood of man. For whatever that means. And so I cry sometimes when I'm lying in bed just to get it all out what's in my head. And I'm feeling a little peculiar. And so I wake in the morning and I step outside and I take a deep breath and I get real high and I scream from the top of my lungs, what's going on? And I say, hey, yeah, yeah, hey, yeah, yeah. I said, hey, what's going on? And I
times.
Ooh, 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 ooh. Got too excited.
And I try. Oh my God, do I try? I try all the time in this institution. And I pray. Oh my God, do I pray? My life is still trying to get up that great big hill of hope for a destination.
Yeah! Woo, woo, woo! Oh my God, that felt so good.
Yes.
I love the song we sing together. Okay, so now I'm going to play Robert's playlist, which is based on the topic of tonight's show, which is about queer families. Oops.
Sorry.
Queer families and queer love and all that stuff. And it's a really amazing playlist. So I'm going to play that right now. Thank you for listening and tune in next month.
Thank you.
Thank you. impossible love. Say you stay with me. We'll be right back.
Mine. And then you took me out to find higher and higher and higher. can't hear you. I must have lost track of your voice. In this cacophonical choir, among the bad tasting words which I never had heard. Beautiful, beautiful.
Thank you. careful, they tease one another, take pride in themselves, keeping the other one down. Well, I'm not like that at all. And some people, they hurt one another, they love to see hurt in the other one's eyes. Well, I'm not like that at all. And some people are born for each other, they love to walk holding the other one's hand. They always understand. Some people cry, some people know why. Some people, they use one another so aimlessly, not like lovers do. Tells you you're not alone. Some people are born for each other. They love to walk holding the other one's hand. They always understand. Some people cry. Some people know why. They love to walk.
Do this for me now. Try your family smoking cigarettes. Try your family cheating at cards. Try your family starting over. Try your family standing still.
Been listening to Adventures Within with Jennifer Moon and Robert Watkins. This has been a production of Faction 2 of The Revolution. For more information on The Revolution, visit jmoon.net. You can also follow Adventures Within on the K-Chung Tumblr at adventureswithin.kchungradio.org. Join us every third Sunday of the month from 6 to 8 p.m. for another episode of Adventures Within on K-Chung Radio.